I leave them hanging, never knowing that I'm fine. Why am I fine? How could Mother and Daddy do it? Are they monsters? Her father pulled her thick red hair back into a ponytail and brushed his face with it. Come on, Janie, he coaxed. I need you out there cheering. Bring a crowd. Make all those high school kids come and yell for us. Daddy, don't pull my hair like that. She tugged herself free. Now she had hurt her father as well. He loves me, she thought. How could love arise from a crime like kidnapping? There's a great movie on tonight, said her mother. Want to watch it with me? Can't. Too much homework. Janie left the table, clearing her entirely clean plate. She went up to her room, shutting the door firmly. She tried to put her parents out of her mind. But Janie was peace-loving. The little fight stuck her like needles. She calmed herself, going through her clothes, deciding what to wear tomorrow. There was an honors breakfast. The marking period had ended. The first quarter was over. It seemed to her they were shooting through fall, rocketing toward winter, that Christmas would have arrived before she had even gotten her winter coat out. She was in the mood for an entire new wardrobe. She wondered if her mother would take her shopping. Shopping. Memory struck like an axe. It was the clearest daymare yet, complete with dialogue. They were clothes shopping. They. Who were they? She couldn't quite see them, but she could hear them. No, you can't have that, Jenny. You've got loads of hand-me-downs. But, Mommy. Not now. Can't you see I'm busy with the twins? But, Mommy. No, you don't need a patent leather handbag. Jenny, stomping off by herself, finding that store with those high, swiveling stools, sitting at the counter, swinging herself in circles, pushing herself by the edge of the counter. The counter was a pale, greenish-flecked formica. The napkins popped out of a little stainless steel box. The woman with the long, shiny hair sat next to her. Bought her a sundae. Toward 8 o'clock, her father knocked on her door. Kitten, may I come in? Sure. Who was the woman, thought Janie. My mother downstairs? Another wife of Daddy's? The shopping mother? She called me Jenny, and I answered. It was my name. Her father entered tentatively, as if he didn't know her or the room. Something wrong, honey? Why are you mad at us? He was a big man, lean, able to have seconds on gravy without a thought. He had gone gray early, but lost no hair. The mass of gleaming silvery hair was distinguished. She said evenly, Why would you think that? Because you are. You're hostile and mean. What's going on? You tell me. She wanted to force answers out of him, but she didn't want to ask the questions. They screamed at each other, and theirs wasn't a screaming family. Janie couldn't remember when she had thrown ugly words at her parents. But in the morning she had to rush to school for the honors breakfast. Jelly donuts, orange juice, and coffee supplied by the Parent-Teacher Association for anybody with the grades. It was dumb and embarrassing, but nobody ever missed it. You didn't get the rounds of applause for a B average that you got for playing football, nor the spotlight for a terrific term paper that you got for the jazz band. You had to settle for a jelly donut and one line in the newspaper listing. Reeve was there. Reeve? Said everybody, staggering around, clutching their hearts, running to the principal to double-check the honors list. This is Reeve?
our Reeve?
Reeve, whose arms have never been weighted down with those paper and cardboard things known as books?
Drop dead, said Reeve.
But he was grinning. Janey beamed at him.
Reeve, I didn't know you were doing so well, she accused him. You made me think you were going to have to repeat your entire academic career.
Reeve shrugged like a little kid.
I wasn't sure I could get the grades, he admitted to her. I never tried before. Grades are what Megan and Lizzie and Todd do, not me.
Mr. McCain, Sarah Charlotte said to the principal, did Reeve pay you off, or is he just a misprint on the honors list?
Reeve studied brilliantly, said the principal. Reeve is becoming a fine, fine student indeed, just like...
Don't let McCain say just like his sisters and brother, thought Janey. It will ruin it for Reeve.
Let this be Reeve's, not some spin-off.
Just like me, she said, striking a center stage pose and flinging her vast quantity of red hair around.
Oh, yeah, said Sarah Charlotte. You who sneak in here with exactly 0.1% above the minimum.
Reeve, if you're going to imitate anybody, imitate me. She flirted madly with him, seizing his wrist and beginning to dance wildly. Reeve grinned. Joyfully, the PTA president announced that it was time to sit down.
What a fine, fine chance for all you brilliant young people to get to know each other better and find new friends, she said, trying to make them talk to people they didn't want to talk to. She had no success. It appeared that nobody wanted any new friends.
With much grumbling, they tried to shuffle place cards and sit with their old friends. PTA mothers intervened. Janey ended up at a table with all juniors and seniors, none of whom she knew. She looked yearningly for somebody to switch with, but Reeve had landed with seniors who were giving him a ritually hard time for having joined academic ranks, and Sarah Charlotte was lost in the crowd.
"Introduce yourselves to the person next to you," caroled the PTA mother.
Janey was very glad her own mother had been president when Janey was in middle school, and she had been spared this humiliation. She knew who the PTA president's kid was just by checking out the hunched shoulders.
"Hi, I'm Dave," said the boy next to her, dutifully.
"Janey," she said.
"Tell me about yourself," dictated the PTA mother, as if they were memorizing lines from a play.
"Tell me about yourself," repeated Dave.
"Well, I was kidnapped at age 3 from a shopping center in New Jersey." Janey panicked. Had she said that out loud? Had those words really fallen out of her mouth? No, surely not.
"Just the basics," said Dave teasingly. "This isn't an autobiography for advanced comp."
"Where were you born? Who are your parents? How long have you lived in Connecticut? That kind of thing." The room shifted and the table slanted. She wondered why the coffee didn't spill, why the donuts didn't slide to the floor. Dave blurred when she tried to face him. Parents and Hannah, kidnaps and cars, drove through her eyes and crashed at the back of her brain.
I play tennis a lot.
"She's afraid of you," said a senior girl.
"Gee, that's pretty neat, Dave. You're not only an honor student, you're a big bad wolf."
The other kids all dropped their voices an octave.
"You're big," they drawled, pointing at Dave. "And you're bad. And..."
Janey's head cleared. She said, "I faint every morning if I don't have all the jelly donuts in sight. Somebody quick pass me a jelly donut."
"We ate all the jelly donuts," said the girl. "You have to have a plain one."
"She can have mine," said Dave. "Look, chocolate icing. Now there's an energizer."
He held it out of reach, so she would have to make an effort, touch his hand, lean toward him. Dave was interested in her. Interested. That world of dating and movies and the back seats of cars. If she smiled back in the right way, one thing would lead to another. She wondered if Reeve was watching. If she flirted with Dave, would Reeve be angry, jealous? Would he decide to speak up and claim her before Dave did? And Sarah Charlotte, was she watching? Janie looked more carefully at Dave, to assess his personality and appearance. She became aware that Dave had asked her another question. She said. I wasn't listening. I said Dave very clearly, where are you from? I just moved here last year from Colorado. She knew he was trying to start a real conversation. That being from away, having first impressions of this part of the country, was a classic opener. But I don't know where I'm from, she thought, or who I am. The breakfast was over. Half the people at her table had already left. One of them was Dave. Sarah Charlotte came over practically hissing. Janie Johnson! You could at least talk to the guy. What's the matter with you these days? I don't know, said Janie. She tried to imagine herself telling Sarah Charlotte the kidnap stories. It's not like he's asking you to sleep with him, you know, said Sarah Charlotte. Janie didn't know why Sarah Charlotte had to go so far in her plans for Janie. One kiss with Reeve and Sarah Charlotte had decided Janie had a sexual history. And he was so adorable, said Sarah Charlotte. I never noticed him before. It's odd how you can be in school with people you never see. School that day was a queer and floating place. Janie filled her spot. She talked, wrote, wended her way from hall to class. But she was a mind floating in an ocean of confusion, battered against milk carton photographs and attic trunks. It was raining again that afternoon, so Reeve gave her a ride home. She wanted him to say, I love you, or let's go to a movie, or don't be friends with Dave, be friends with me. But Reeve just poked the radio buttons endlessly, dissatisfied with every station. She wanted him to kiss her again, and she wanted him to suggest it, or start it. I can't make small talk, she said. Breakfast was awful. It was like filling out a form. Reeve laughed. I loved it. All the girls flirted with me. Why did he say that? She thought, utterly miserable. I don't want to be the one who's jealous. Dave kept asking me questions I didn't know the answers to. He asked where you were born, said Reeve. You couldn't come up with that? Reeve, I don't know the answers to questions like that. Reeve moaned. That sounds like my philosophy class. I hate that kind of thing. Don't you start it. Reeve, if I tell you something, will you keep it a secret? The Johnsons have secrets? I don't believe it. I don't believe it either. That's half the problem. I can't tell if I'm going insane or taking drugs in my sleep or if...
If what?
But it was too preposterous to say, especially to Reeve. He, more than anybody, would find it absurd. He knew the family too well. Janie, said Reeve loudly, as if saying it for the 10th time. We're here. Get out. She stared at him. Who was he? Had she ever seen him before? Her fingers fumbled for the handle. Her hands were stiff and numb, as if she were going into rigor mortis. She remembered leaving the stool. The stool that could only be in that shopping center in New Jersey. Remembered hopping down from that green counter and leaving that half-eaten vanilla ice cream sundae, remembered somebody taking her hand, saying, "Let's go for a ride now." She remembered herself laughing, delighted, and going. "I gave up my real family for a Sunday," thought Janie Johnson. She crossed the shrub barrier between their driveways. Both her parents' cars were there. She walked slowly, rain pouring on her hair and her face. Inside the side door, she scuffed the bottoms of her wet shoes on the rubber mat. Her mother had made a pot of coffee. Janie could smell it, filling the house like breakfast and warmth. She walked into the kitchen. It was like a child scene built in a shoebox for second grade. Her father pouring milk in his mug, her mother filling the sugar bowl, the clock chiming, the snack they were having, a Pepperidge Farm cake defrosting on the counter. "I will go mad if I don't find out," she thought, "if I'm not already mad." Still dripping from the rain, clinging to her book bag, Janie said, "I want to know why there aren't any photographs of me until I'm 5. Even if you didn't buy a camera until then, you would have had a baby portrait done. I want to know who Hannah is upstairs in the trunk. I want to know why you won't let me see my birth certificate." Chapter 9. A silence as long as some lives. Janie thought she might fall over. Her father's hand was molded to his coffee mug. Her mother's hand stuck to her spoon. Janie couldn't step closer. She couldn't run away. The demon had seized them all in his daymare. Her mother sank very slowly into a chair. Her father very slowly raised his chin to look into his wife's eyes. Like puppets, they nodded. Screams rioted in Janie's skull. She gripped the book bag as if she planned to throw grenades. In syllables that dropped as softly as notes on a flute, her mother said, "Hannah is your mother, Janie. We aren't really your parents." "No," cried Janie's soul. "No, no, 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 no." "We are your grandparents. Hannah was our daughter." Janie dropped the book bag. "Is that all?" she cried. She flung herself onto her mother. "Is that all? I thought... Oh, mother, you just can't imagine what I thought." She couldn't stop repeating herself. She hugged her mother ferociously, feeling the strength of wrestlers in her arms. "Oh, Mommy, that's all it is?" "We're related. It's okay. She's all but my mother. There's no daymare, no nightmare, no demons. Hannah just had an illegitimate baby, and it's me, and that's all there is to it." Her father came up behind her, gave her a ponytail, and pulled her backward by her red hair. His hug was also the hug of wrestlers, hanging on to her, as if they were in danger of falling over cliffs. She leaned on him, letting the horrible cliff of kidnapping out of her mind. "We love you, honey. You are our daughter. Just not legally and biologically. We don't have a birth certificate for you, so we don't know what we're going to do about your passport and your driver's license and things like that."
"Who even cares?" said Janie.
She found she was sobbing. Her hair was wet, her coat was wet, her cheeks were wet. Her mother peeled away the outer layer of Janie's clothing. "I'll fix you a snack," said her mother. She patted Janie, as if to dry her by hand. Her mother's teeth were chattering. "Food solves all," agreed Janie, laughing through tears.
"The old Johnson family motto," said her father.
Janie pulled away from them.
"But I'm not completely a Johnson, then?"
Nobody here is a Johnson, said her father. It's a long story, Janie. All three were breathing hard, as if from a long jog in the cold.
Let's sit on the couch together, said her mother, forgetting snacks, so we can hug. I've rehearsed this in my mind 1,000 times, but now that we're here, I've forgotten my lines.
They sank together in the big velvet couch in the living room, Janie in the middle, a parent holding each hand. She was so tired from the assault of emotion she could hardly hold her head up. She rested against her father's shoulder.
Our name isn't Johnson, said her father. It's Javinson. We've never come across the name anywhere else. It has a Scandinavian sound, but we really don't know much about my family.
Javinson, thought Janie. I like it, she thought. It's better than Jane Johnstone. Jane Javinson.
Your mother and I.
Her father's voice staggered, like clumsy feet.
I guess I'd better say your grandmother and I.
Janie shuddered. No, don't say that. She put a hand against his chest, as if to trap those words.
We'll call us Frank and Miranda, then, said Janie's mother.
And the story her parents told, line by line, agony by agony, was so sad that Janie wept for them. Frank had a degree in accounting, and Miranda had a degree in medieval literature. Frank went to work for IBM in marketing. They got married, and a year later, a baby girl was born. They named her Hannah, which meant full of grace. Hannah laughed and cooed and was happy her entire childhood.
Hannah was my whole life, said Janie's mother,
her eyes fastened on a past Janie knew nothing of.
I'm your whole life, thought Janie,
jealous and angry that somebody had come before her. But Hannah had been an unusual child. Janie frowned when they described Hannah. She could think of no girl who even slightly resembled Hannah. Hannah had never wanted to do the things other girls did. She didn't want to play with dolls or ride a bike. When she was a teenager, she didn't care about boys or getting a tan or the radio. She worried about right and wrong.
From the time she was very small, the inequities of life horrified Hannah. How could her family have so much and the world so little?
Miranda could volunteer for a cause, do whatever a committee could do, and return home happy to a good dinner. Hannah never felt she deserved dinner.
Hannah was beautiful, said her father, in a haunting sort of way. Hannah always seemed to be looking at something else. In another age, she might have become a nun and spent her life thinking of God. But we weren't a religious family, and I don't suppose she even knew what a nun was.
The oddest thing was happening. Janie was falling asleep. The sleepless nights worrying about the milk carton and whether to dial the 800 number had caught up to her.
"Do you know what a cult is?" her father asked.
Janie shook her head, bumping his shoulder.
A cult is a religious group with exceedingly strict rules for the people who join it.
The Hare Krishna movement swept America like a prairie fire in the 60s and 70s, Janie. It attracted young and old, hippie and conservative, East Coast and West Coast. And it attracted Hannah. She met a group of young people who told her that if she became a Hare Krishna, she would be purified. It would no longer be her fault she had so much, because they wouldn't let her have anything. She would be saved. When she was 16, she fell on her knees and begged to be allowed to be one of them.
Janie could picture none of this.
They were scary people, said her mother. They wore bright yellow robes. The men shaved their heads. They carried bowls and begged.
You saw them everywhere in cities, in airports, chanting and demanding money. But where we tried to be honest with Hannah, saying, "Nobody knows why some people starve and some people have everything," the leaders of the cult had answers for all her questions. And what Hannah wanted, in the end, was a set of answers and a set of rules. Yellow robes made her think dimly of National Geographic photos, but it evoked no memory.
16, therefore, is a terrifying age for us, said her father.
He tried to laugh.
That's why we're having such a hard time with you, Janie. We have to give up part of you. Let you drive. Maybe take the trip with the Spanish class. Go off to college. Make your own decisions. But Hannah's decision, it ruined our lives and hers.
Why didn't you tell me before now? Janie asked.
Her mother was shuddering violently, from her teeth to her knees.
Because we were so afraid you'd want to find your mother, or maybe your father, and get sucked up in that cult, too. I can't go through that again. I can't lose another daughter. Janie, please. They need me, thought Janie. They need my comfort. I wouldn't do that to you. You won't have to go through that twice. I promise.
Her parents kissed her on each side. Her mother took both her hands now and held them against her cheek, as if in prayer.
We tried everything to get Hannah out. We took her on long vacations. We sent her to live with my cousin in Atlanta. We tried traditional church. But she went to California to join the temple commune. There was nothing we could do. The law wasn't on our side. Hannah wasn't on our side. The cult even had armed bodyguards to keep parents like us from snatching our children back. Snatching children, thought Janie. To think I actually thought Mommy and Daddy had snatched me. She could no longer keep her eyes open, but let herself doze against her father's warmth.
We wrote continually,
said her mother in a strangled weep.
But Hannah rarely wrote back. The few times we were allowed to visit, she seemed dulled, like a silver spoon that needs to be polished. She spoke only when spoken to. All her responses were memorized. Our beautiful Hannah had stopped smiling forever.
I'm very happy here, she would say tonelessly, like a mechanical object. I was still with IBM, said her father. I was transferred frequently. We sent Hannah every address change. Whenever I went on a business trip, I mailed her postcards. I suppose I thought I could entice her back into the world with pictures of waterfalls in the mountains or castles in Europe.
Janie tried to remember California.
Her mother whispered,
"We were good parents, Janie. We were. We never knew what we had done wrong or why she rejected everything we ever taught her. We tried everything to get her back. We sent police. We paid the cult off. We tried to de-brainwash her when she visited. But she wanted to be in the cult. She was like a very tall, docile toddler. She simply obeyed her leader. Her mind was strangled. We wept on her birthday, and that was all we had of Hannah."
Her father described the passage of years in which Hannah led a weird, enclosed life with harsh, incomprehensible people.
We got an official letter telling us she had been wed to a man in the cult. That was all they told, not even his name. Then one day, said her mother, the front door opened. I was making pound cake for the women's club bake sale. I was in the kitchen adding 6 eggs to the batter, and the beaters were whirling. I had added the first 4. I remember that so clearly. I had 2 eggs to go, and there stood Hannah, holding you by the hand. Her parents sat up. Janie was amazed by this mutual physical response of the emotions.
Even their posture knew the worst was over. Her father leaned forward, resting an elbow on his knee and cupping his chin so he could look at Janie. Her mother's voice lightened. She ran her hands through Janie's red mane, held both Janie's cheeks, and kissed the tip of Janie's tilted nose. "You were such a beautiful child." "I was a resurrection for them," thought Janie. "Hannah reborn." "You were her little girl, by the man who had been chosen as her mate by the leader." "Mate?" repeated Janie. What an animal term for the love between husband and wife. Her mother didn't hear her. "You had no clothes except the clothes you were wearing. I had the best time taking you shopping. We bought sweet little socks with ribbon trim, and the cutest little jacket with bunnies on it, and a tiny little beret. It was so adorable against your red braids. You had the best time. You had never had so much attention. I suppose in the cult you were in some kind of daycare. You often referred to the other children and asked about them." Those twins, thought Janie. The spilled milk. It was just daycare. "We gave you your own bedroom, and you thought that was the most exciting thing that ever happened." "You know what would be exciting now?" said her father. "Dinner. I'm absolutely starving. Nothing builds an appetite like trauma." Janie giggled. She felt warm and toasty and complete. "Let's nuke the leftover pot roast," he said. "Are there any potatoes left, Miranda?" "No, but I can make instant mashed if you want them, Frank." "I love instant," said her father. They went into the kitchen, as if leaving the bad parts of the story behind in the living room. Good things happen with hot food, thought Janie. "So go on," she said when the pot roast was nuked. "Hannah came in the door and you bought me tons of clothes, and then what?" "Well," said her mother excitedly, "Hannah had realized the cult was a terrible way to bring up her little daughter, so she escaped. She didn't even like you near the windows for fear the guards of the cult would be there, peering through the curtains. The second night of celebrating Hannah's return and your existence, we realized that the cult could find us just as easily as Hannah had, because, of course, we had always sent our forwarding address." Minutes ago, Janie had been incredibly sleepy. Now she was incredibly hungry, eating as if she had never known food. Her hands shoveled the meat into her mouth. She felt like an animal. Her parents saw nothing. They were a tag team, rotating speeches. "IBM knew all about Hannah and the cult because I was always flying west trying to extricate Hannah. They not only transferred me immediately, they got us into a hotel that night under assumed names until they could pack our belongings for us. My senior vice president even sold our house through a power of attorney for me, so the cult wouldn't find our names anywhere. We had all mail forwarded through the company, never to our house." She had no memories of the West Coast. This cult with its costumes, capes, and rituals. The woman and man who were Hannah and her designated mate. No memory of a cross-continental flight. 3 years old. Wouldn't you remember planes and trains, cars and overnights, even if you were only three? Thought Janie, disappointed. Janie Johnson. A name to disappear under. A name without personality, without trace. "You had the best time, Janie," said her mother. For the first time, Janie saw clearly how old they were. Much older than her friends' parents. And more tired, too. More used. "Hannah, what did you do to them?" thought Janie. "How could you have thrown them away like yesterday's newspaper? Your own mother and father, who tried so hard to give you everything, to get you back."
We were fleeing, but you were in heaven, Janie, bouncing all over the place. Her mother painted a happy little Janie in the new houses, buying new clothes, teaching her to swim, Hannah standing blank-eyed, packing boxes never unpacked before the next flight. Yet another different driveway, Janie dancing like a water sprite.
But even though we did all we could, said her father, Hannah eventually wanted to go back to the cult.
This time Janie entered the daymare willingly, as if it were a hallway down which she could walk, if she chose. She felt that down that corridor she could find Hannah, find California, remember that nursery school. The laughter of children rang in Janie's head. Then something different. A man's laughter, big and chesty, and she knew herself held in the air by this man. A red mustache. She was tugging the mustache, and he was nibbling Jenny's fingers. She could even feel its texture, bristled like a paintbrush, same color as her own braids. She could remember the braids, remember the way the rubber bands yanked when... Hannah was addicted to the cult the way some people are addicted to heroin. When Hannah insisted on going back, we let her. Her mother's voice grew urgent. She wanted us to keep you, Janie. I've always cherished that. She loved you very, very much. You have to know that. In the windows, her mother's red geraniums still bloomed. Their lives in the sun were probably happier than Hannah's. Her mother's hands covered Janie, patting, needy. She gave you up so you could have a real life. Your mother gave you the gift of freedom, Janie. It was the only gift she had to give. She left you with us when she went back to the cult. Shortly after Hannah left, Frank and Miranda had realized that the cult would want the little girl, not to mention the father, whoever he might be. Hannah had no strength. One interrogation and she'd tell the cult where she had left her daughter. Their attorney advised them to change their name. Javinson was too unusual, so they had taken Johnson.
We moved several times in 1 year, said her father. Looking back, I suppose it was irrational. But whenever we let you out in the yard, we'd panic. So we kept finding a new yard. You loved it. You were always giggling, always the center of attention. It took you a while, but eventually you switched to calling us Mommy and Daddy.
Her mother beamed, a smile like the sun. If I hadn't come to live with them, Mom would never have smiled like that again, thought Janie. I am that smile. And then we made the most painful decision of all, said her mother. We never wrote to Hannah again. Our only daughter, your mother. We never sent her an address. We never again telephoned on her birthday. We never chose and wrapped another Christmas present for her. We let her vanish into nowhere so that we could keep you safe. They were no longer at the table, no longer eating. They had all gotten up, their bodies desperate for comfort. They were hugging each other, an oddly rocking trio.
Oh, Mommy, said Janie.
They cried together. Her father didn't weep, but then he never did. He got tight, the muscles bunching in his jaw, no doubt also in his gut. Janie hugged him separately, and her father hugged her back, with affection so deep she could hardly bear it. They are my mother and father, she thought. They raised me. They love me. I love them. Mother and Daddy are all I have and all I want. Chapter 10. She woke up as if attacked, ripped out of sleep. Her body was drenched in sweat, and her thin nightgown clung damply to her skin.
Monsters and hideous evil sucking things scattered in her brain. She lay in the dark, clinging to the satin hem at the top of the blanket. Just a dream. Just a dream. She wanted to get up and get a glass of water, find another blanket, turn on some lights. But she was caught in an old childhood fear of things under the bed, the silly fear that kept her even now at nearly 16 from sleeping with her toes hanging off the edge. Something might nibble them, drag her down. Slowly she curled tighter and tighter under the covers, bracketing her spine with her pillow, protecting her heart and soul with tucked-in knees. It was a nice story they had told last night. But what about the springs? What about the milk carton? Hannah was real. The trunk in the attic, full of her geography papers, proved it. But the milk carton was real. Jenny Spring was real, and so was that 800 number. New Jersey was real. And that shopping center. I remember a friendly kitchen with lots of kids. I remember shoe shopping. I remember... Memory swirled dimly. She held herself still, trying to pull them in, like a fisherman with a reel. The cult didn't sound like people who would take their nursery school class shopping in malls for shiny white shoes. The white apron? Was it Hannah's? Why did she remember a white apron and not yellow robes? California and cults should make a deeper imprint on a child's memory than a sundae and a swiveling stool. Janie's made-up version slipped and slid like cars on ice. They crashed into what few dim memories she had, or had created. But one thing was true and certain. The dress in the attic matched the dress on the carton. In the dark of her bedroom, an idea misted in her brain like fog, dank and sour and thick. Had Miranda and Frank Javinson, their minds warped from losing Hannah, decided to replace her with a new little daughter? Had they gone for a drive, in the heat and the sun and the dusty wind? Had they landed in a shopping center in New Jersey? Had her mother, a different, younger mother, twirled on a stool beside a little girl named Jenny Spring, bought her with nothing more than ice cream? Taken her home forever. A real kidnapping. Her dear, sane, good parents. Janie's notebook faded in and out of her brain like the shadow of a migrating bird, with a flattened milk carton clipped to the cover. She could show them the milk carton. She could say, "I know the truth." But then what? She didn't want the truth to be true any more than they did. She wanted to be their daughter, too. Janie lay awake the rest of the night, sifting her brain, finding nothing certain. In the morning, they had breakfast together. This was unusual. Her father normally left for work before Janie got up. Her mother liked to be solitary in the morning and sipped coffee alone in her bedroom, reading the morning paper, while Janie had a glass of orange juice and a croissant. They were as nervous as strangers waiting to have their teeth drilled. They drank orange juice as if it were spiked with cyanide. They buttered toast and abandoned it. How had her parents slept? Janie wondered. Were their hearts on Hannah this morning? And my heart, thought Janie. Where is my heart? Janie was too exhausted for speech. In her head, the daymares clamored for attention. Toddlers in high chairs pounding spoons on the tray. Laughter ricocheting off kitchen walls. Car doors slamming. The faces of her mother and father at the breakfast table seemed to crawl over and through the daymares. Her father set his untasted coffee next to his untouched toast. "Janie, honey, are you all right?" "Sure, Dad." Her father's smile was pasty and peculiar. "You don't look as if you slept." "No, There was a lot to think about.
Do you have any questions?
Her father said nervously. She had a million questions. But they would answer in lies, and she couldn't bear it. Her father, whom tax clients and soccer teams adored and respected. Her mother, who cared so passionately about the hospitals and the illiterate and the schools. Telling lie after lie after lie, because in fact they were criminals. Perhaps they don't even know anymore, she thought. Perhaps for them too the daymare has blended with the daydream, and the truth is lost.
You and I should spend the day together, said her mother. I'll phone the school. I'll cancel my meeting in Hartford.
No, I have an important test. Anyway, I want to talk to Sarah Charlotte.
She would never tell Sarah Charlotte. She would never tell anybody.
What words were there? My parents are insane. They lost a daughter and kidnapped another, except they probably didn't. I'm probably their granddaughter with a demon inside.
Go to your meeting. I'll see you at supper.
Her father said, Maybe it's best to try to keep things normal. Regular schedules, that sort of thing.
Normal, thought Janie, choking back hysteria.
Her mother turned into a whirlwind, gathering papers while she snatched up clean stockings from the drying rack, telephoning another board member while she wriggled into her crimson suit. She always looked so authoritative in that suit. Her father wanted to kiss her goodbye. His arms seemed to hang inside his jacket as if they had been stapled there. He had a hard time lifting them toward Janie. Her father, whose perfect coordination came from years and years of sports. This morning his silvery hair hung on his forehead like a grandfather's, not a father's.
He's afraid I won't love him as much, thought Janie.
But I do. I don't care what they did. I love them just as much. How can that be?
I love you, honey, said her father desperately. I'm sorry about all of it, but
I love you too. Janie tacked on her brightest smile, allowing him to leave. He hugged her, but she didn't hug back, and he knew it and was afraid.
Janie, he said, we did the best we could, with you and with Hannah.
I don't care about Hannah, said Janie, which was certainly true. Her mother came rushing back. Do you think this pin looks good? Said her mother anxiously, touching the silver brooch she had fastened to her scarf. Her mother didn't feel comfortable with pins. She was always sure they had drooped or turned themselves backward.
It looks fine, said Janie.
She looked out the window, pouring again. What was with all this rain? At least she could ride with Reeve this morning, instead of waiting for the bus.
Goodbye, Daddy, she said, forcing herself to hug him. I hope your meeting is good, Mom.
Her father said, You'll telephone me at the office if you're upset or anything, won't you?
Outside in the rain, Reeve honked his horn.
Have a good day at school, sweetheart, said her mother. Maybe I should stay by the phone in case you want to call, or I could call you from Hartford.
Mom, said Janie, everything's fine. Don't worry. See you later.
She grabbed her coat, her books, her bag lunch with its non-milk drink, and flew out the door. Reeve had given up on her and reached the end of his driveway. Screaming, she ran after him.
Reeve, here I am!
He saw her, grinned, reversed, and waited for her.
Thought you took the bus after all, he said. Did you sleep late? You look frantic.
She laughed hysterically.
That's just how I feel, he agreed. Here I make a hit by getting on honor roll,
And the very next day I don't finish my homework and I have to go make an ass of myself with an oral presentation in English.
I wish we could cut school, Janie said.
Okay, let's, said Reeve. There's nothing I want in that building.
They were heading into town. They were on the overpass of the interstate. Janie said, Get on the highway, then. Head south.
Reeve's jaw dropped. You serious? Janie, of the sweet, obedient personality, wants to cut class?
Yes. Turn. Hurry up. You'll miss the entrance.
Reeve got on the highway and turned south. The windshield wipers clicked rhythmically. The rain thudded metallically on the roof. Reeve turned the radio up louder. They were listening to KC 101 Rock.
Janie had never heard KC 101 at this hour. She was always in school.
The miles went by. They passed a turnpike rest stop and gas station. Their speed dropped. They were in rush hour traffic. 1,000 cars throbbed around them.
We can't turn back now, said Reeve, waving his watch.
His grin tested her, to see if she was serious.
Buddy, thought Janie, you don't know how serious I am.
We're officially late, said Reeve. We go to school now, we have to get late passes from the vice principal, and they telephone our parents.
It doesn't matter, said Janie. We're going to New Jersey.
Chapter 11. They spent 2 hours on the Connecticut Turnpike. Janie read every blue and white highway sign as if it were immortal literature and she was going to be tested. On the New York Thruway, they paid a toll and turned north for White Plains, where they headed for the Tappan Zee Bridge and crossed the Hudson River. The river was very wide and flat, the same gray color as the sky. A single barge floated downstream. All that water, thought Janie, and no traffic on it. She stared at the apartment buildings and houses on the riverbanks and pretended to choose a place where Jane Johnstone would live. Jane Johnstone. She had planned Jane to be mysterious and sensual and full of flair. She had always thought of mysteries as exciting curtains, to be tugged aside to reveal intriguing pasts. But her mystery was sick and vicious. Was she even now driving on the very road that Frank and Miranda Javinson had driven down when they made their horrible decision to replace Hannah? Had they ever talked about it? Out loud? Ever said to each other, "Why don't we kidnap somebody?" Or had it just happened of its own accord, without plan, and then somehow had seemed right to them, instead of hideously, evilly wrong?
"Janie," said Reeve, "it's impossible."
Janie held up the milk carton.
"I see the milk carton," said Reeve, "but that isn't you. How could you recognize you after all these years?"
"I don't recognize me. I recognize my dress. Reeve, this dress is in the attic, in Hannah's trunk."
"Come on. There must be a trillion polka-dotted dresses that little girls wore once. My sisters probably wore that stuff, so big deal."
"It is a big deal, Reeve."
She could feel that Reeve wanted to drive 100 miles an hour and was angry with the traffic and the law for keeping him back.
"And who could this Spring family be?" demanded Reeve. "Maybe it's a conspiracy the Springs dreamed up to destroy your mother and father. They'd go to prison, you know, if they really kidnapped you."
Reeve looked right at her.
"Which they didn't," he said.
Prison. Another dark and vicious word. She had never seen a prison, except on TV cop shows. Her mother. Stripped, searched, locked up, and tormented.
"Mommy," Janie's heart cried. But out loud, she said calmly, "Okay, I've been studying this map of New Jersey." She was glad driving took so much of Reeves' attention. He didn't have much turnpike experience. The heavy, truck-filled traffic kept Reeves' eyes ahead, or on the mirrors, but rarely able to meet Janie's eyes. "It's a good thing that gas station was stocked with maps. We want to get off in 17 more exits and then turn south. The town where the shopping center is will be halfway between..." "What are we going to do when we get there?" Reeve demanded. She said nothing. She didn't know yet. "Janie, how am I going to explain to my parents where we've been?" "Why do we have to explain to anybody? Let's say we went, just driving around, killing time. We felt like skipping school." Reeve said uneasily, "They'll figure we found a motel room or a nice private beach. They'll figure it's sex we wanted, not getting out of a test or an oral report." Janie swallowed. Normally a natural, unnoticeable task, swallowing had become almost an athletic event. "It's too cold for a beach," she thought. She pictured herself and Reeve on hot sand, nothing but a string bikini between them. She said, "It's a long way. New Jersey is a much bigger state than you think it is." A double truck passed them, spraying such a puddle of water over the windshield that they were blinded. For a moment, they were as isolated as if they were trapped in a tin can. Reeve turned the wipers up to high. The water was whacked away. "Though anybody less interested in sex and romance than you would be hard to imagine, Janie. You're a little scary. You're like this hard, sharp-pointed thing." "He doesn't like me," thought Janie. "I'm in the car with my best friend. I guess he's my best friend, and not Sarah Charlotte, because it's Reeve I've told. He wants not to be here. He doesn't like this person in his passenger seat." "I've got to find out," she said. "Why don't you just ask your parents?" "Reeve, what am I supposed to say?" "Daddy, stop telling me these cute little stories about Hannah's childhood. Admit you kidnapped me." "It would hurt their feelings." Reeve laughed hysterically. "But Janie, if they did kidnap you, who cares about their feelings?"
"I do. They're my parents and I love them."
Reeve said, "I think we're all a little confused here."
"Wouldn't you be?"
demanded Janie. They drove on and on. New Jersey seemed to last forever. Signs for Philadelphia began to appear.
"That's Pennsylvania," thought Janie.
She knew nothing of Philadelphia except the Revolutionary War and the Constitutional Convention. "Now I'm sliding into a time warp as well as a kidnapping," she thought. "I've lost my parents, I've lost my name, I'm losing my century, too." Reeve found the silence intolerable. He began telling her more than she had ever known about his own childhood. About how Lizzie and Megan were so impressive in everything. Music, sports, academics, even housework. How Lizzie and Megan were virtually an opposing team of two in the Shields' household, each determined to get all the blue ribbons. How Todd, born the year between them, struggled endlessly to be seen and heard in that aggressive sandwich of sisters. How Reeve, born years later, had merely stared at all these superachievers, doing nothing much himself but making the occasional Lego building or turning a TV channel.
"I live next door to them," she thought, "and I hardly noticed." How much does anybody ever notice?
She found herself thinking of Sarah Charlotte, who hadn't noticed any change in Janie. Janie's life had collapsed. Sarah Charlotte nevertheless telephoned each night, giggled each lunchtime, and didn't notice.